Welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Boy, oh boy, a lot to cover with the market moves this week on the back of the Fed meeting. As I mentioned, we covered a lot of those moves through daily editorials nearing the tail end of the week. So please, everyone, go back through our website and podcast and YouTube channel to listen to and catch up on a lot of those interviews. Now it's time to switch our focus to the energy sectors. We are chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report, also the free report, Eye on Energy. One thing to note, too, is Joseph's conference is coming up very soon, October 19th. This conference is in Calgary. I've been a number of years, and it's well worth your time if you want to get in front of a lot of CEOs to learn more about those companies. Joseph is also offering two free tickets to this conference, something that we'll talk about in the later part of this segment. Joseph, let's start off with the moves in the oil price, the recent drop down to $65 a barrel in crude. This was a level that you were outlining to us even a couple months earlier, saying that when oil dropped, you would be issuing a lot of buy recommendations for individual stocks to your subscribers. I saw a couple of those recommendations come through. Joseph, was that the best opportunity, maybe the last opportunity, to get into some of these stocks when oil dropped to $65 a barrel?
Yeah, Corey, we were basing our view on lower oil prices based on the demand side. Demand was weak in the United States. The EIA data that came out this week showed that total consumption of energy was down 0.3% from 2023, and finished motor gasoline was down 0.4%. So the biggest economy user of energy has got a negative number. China has got negative numbers, and the worst case for them is diesel, because the economy is sputtering around. So you've got a demand problem. And that was why we thought we would see lower prices. The big issue, though, was we had a war premium in there because of the concern at one point that Iran would get involved with the fight directly. And the price of crude, if you remember, went up to $87.67 in March, April. And then as things, you know, cooled off and it wasn't looking like there was going to be a direct attack, the price of oil backed off to 72. Then there was the incident with Hezbollah, another situation with Hamas in terms of killing some of the main perpetrators of the attack of October 7th of last year. And then all of a sudden things cooled off and we started focusing on the demand side. And that's when the price of crude went down to $65.27. You had a lot of short selling by hedge funds, and that, you know, took out all of the war premium and took us down to the price we thought was attractive. Today, we're seeing, in the last few days, we're seeing a price bump to $71, $72 a barrel, which is based on, you know, the assumption that the Fed is doing the right thing with the 50 beeps over the 25 basis point cut, and that the economy is going to do okay with a soft landing. And my view is that I think we're going to see data. I don't think the Fed made the 50 basis point cut without knowing that there might be some bad data coming. We're already seeing consumer data very weak, retail spending being very weak, credit card delinquencies picking up, auto delinquencies picking up. The wealthy are doing well. Those who own equities and real estate are doing well. So the higher income people aren't really seeing any problem. It's the lower income people that are. And if that spreads and the you know, you're seeing that the household survey for jobs is showing negative data, which differs from the monthly employment data that the Labor Department puts out. So you've got a dichotomy on two of the major reports. And if the data continues to weaken on the household survey, at some point that'll show up into the official numbers. And I think that will cool things off. And I think we're going to see a test of the lows, you know, 66, 67, sometime in October. And then, of course, maybe bounce around because of tax loss selling in November, December. So there might be additional buying opportunities. And we said we expect in our recent report that the price of crude backs off below 70 again into that 66, 67 range. And we might get another buy signal. We have three buy signals that we watch. One is the absolute price of oil. And that's what happened when we went down to, you know, $66, and we triggered the buy signal you mentioned that we did on September 10th. And we added five new names to our recommended list. And we reiterated three that were already there that were at extremely bargain values. So if people are buying, you know, Canadian energy stocks, be they B-cap, mid-cap, small-cap, if they're looking for dividend income, we have a lot of those names on that list, on the recommended list. And so as you've talked before, ION Energy is where we provide the macro information. And in these paid subscription product is where we do the company specific information. And so I think we will see a test of the lows, and that will give us additional buying opportunities. I have a lot of stocks that are close to buy signals. Again, the other two buy signals I'm watching are, one is the absolute level of the TSX Energy Index, the TX, S&P TX, TSX Energy Index. That's trading right now in the 460 range. I think that's going to go down, in the 340 range. The fresh number, is 267. And I think that's going below 240. It was trading over 300 last year. So I think there's another 10, 15% decline. If we get below 240, that would trigger another buy signal. The other one is the S&P Energy Bullish Percentage Index that we've talked about many times. It was around 70% in June, July, when we had the robust prices for the sector. We've now come down to about 26%. And if I'm right that we see a sub 70 again, and if the markets in general are weak, that could come down below 10%. And that would be that would give us the third buy signal. So we're watching all of those. We were lucky and fortunate to be able to get the buy recommendations out last Tuesday. And I'm looking and I'm watching carefully for any, further opportunities to add names. And we're just thinking that there might be backing filling between now and year end. The reason we're so bullish is, we think that in the second half of 25, we will start seeing growth in the States, growth in China. I think they'll get through their problems. And the big thing is, we're looking for the third world to bring on the commodities that we need, copper, lead, zinc, nickel, lithium, that are all going to be needed for the renewable energy transition. And they're not going to do it unless they can make good livings for their employees, and then the countries get good fiscal opportunities to make money themselves, which means that you're going to see higher prices for those commodities if we're going to get them. We had a nice run in copper to $5. It's back down into the low to mid fours, but that $5 was a record price, and I think we're going to see higher prices. Gold has been stampeding to record highs. Again, weaker U.S. dollar, all the concerns about the deficits around the world, and the concern about, the ability to finance deficits. So I think we're going to see gold get more attractive and move even higher. So when a commodity cycle starts, you see a few run up early. So we saw cocoa and coffee. Then we saw the gold. We saw a nice bounce in energy. Now it's backed off. And again, I think we're going to see all of that get better, because I see $90 WTI on average in second half of 2025. And I see prices over $100 a barrel in 2026. And on the natural gas side, prices are very sloppy, $230, $240 for NYMEX, under a dollar for AECO. But as we get into year end, we're going to be bringing on LNG Canada, which will be 2.1 BCF, which will help lower stocks in Canada and raise prices. The United States, there's one project coming on new at the end of this year, and there are two or three in 2025. So with all of that occurring, we're looking at, $2.75, $3 for NYMEX next year, maybe $2.75 for AECO, Canadian dollars, and then much higher prices for both in 2026. So we're in the last phase of the weak period. And anytime you see weakness, you want to buy, you want to be a buyer on down days. Find the names you like, pick a price that you think is attractive. Yields now are unbelievable. You've got some companies yielding, I'll just go through a few examples. You've got Birchcliff yielding 7.1%. Even some of the big utilities, Enbridge 6.7%. Freehold Royalties 8.3, You've got a Whitecap at 7.5. You've got Pine Cliff at 6.6. You've got Surge at 8.5. Alvopetro 9.7. Petrus 9.2. So there's some very good yields out there for people who are wanting either big cap dividend from pipeline and infrastructure. The royalty trusts give you good yields, and a lot of the E&P companies are doing NCIBs or big dividends. Paramount's got a decent yield. It's one of the names that we really like. Yield there is, Paramount's yield is 6.8%. So there's some nice yields out there from companies that are, and that one's good, paying you a monthly dividend of 15 cents a month, $1.80. So, you know, you look for these stocks on weakness, and the total returns can be exceptional. For the pipeline infrastructures, you're really looking for, you know, 10% capital gain. Take that 7-8%, and that's a fabulous total return when you compare that to what people can get in the bank. So for conservative investors, you can buy Enbridge, TC Energy, Pembina, Keyera. You know, all of these companies provide very decent yields. And in the royalty trust, you can get very, you know, you can get very good yields in Topaz and Freehold. And then in the oil and gas, I gave you some of the names and the numbers before. So there's some decent opportunities there as well. So I'm in the bull camp period. And what I, and as you know, I've been cautious in other months. And I'm looking for any of the periods of weakness between now and year end. Tax loss selling period, October could be nasty. A lot of people think the end of February, the end of September could get nasty. I don't care what happens in the, over the next 3 months. But if any more of those buy signal trigger between now and year end, it's time to just go from, let's say, 70-80% invested in the sector up to where you think, or where you and your investment advisor think is an appropriate 100% waiting for you. We are saying use any weakness from this period on to go to a fully invested position, depending upon what that is for you based on your circumstances.
All right, Joseph. So you've laid out a pretty solid bull case, even if we do see a corrective move back down into the 60s for oil and for nat gas as well. Now, you say you're looking ahead to 2025 and could see upwards of $90 WTI, but just to take the other side of it, let's look at the bearish thesis real quick. The Fed is cutting, to your point, because they obviously see some economic weakness in the forecast. And we've heard for 2 years that we're going to see a recession in the U.S. Obviously, China's not breaking any records, and Europe is already in a recession, many would argue. So what would keep the oil price levitated up to the 80s or 90s next year if everybody's in a recession and it's not a soft landing? What would happen if this economic contraction has some teeth to it and the oil price got stuck in the 60s? How stable are those dividends, and what would the company sector look like if oil doesn't jump as expected?
Well, if you're going to, you know, look at the world, and the world is going to have to start bringing on the copper, nickel, aluminum, that's where the growth is this year. If you look at the U.S., I said we have negative comparisons year over year, but we should see 750 to 850,000 BOE a day increase in 2024 based on third world showing the growth, India, you know, South American countries, countries in the Middle East, European countries are consuming somewhat more. A lot of that is covered in, you know, the EIA data or in the OPEC data. So you are seeing growth rates there. And so if we see the American economy, you know, go through, let's say, a soft landing and come out of it, and if you have both parties supporting fracking and growing independent resources in the United States, then the oil industry is going to drill their tier one wells, and they're not going to drill them at low prices. If, you know, what I find really amusing about the politicians is they think if they increase the production by loosening up the environmental standards, opening up federal lands, the price of oil is going to go down. No, the price of oil is going to go up, because unless the rates of return are attractive, the companies aren't going to spend the money, because you're going to need to build infrastructure on that land. You're going to have to drill the wells. You're going to have to do the seismic. And all of that requires a capital investment, and you want a return on that capital investment. So there's going to have to be higher prices, not lower. And this hope for sub $2 gas, is, I don't think happens unless there's a severe recession. And I think we're going to see this $3 to $4 gas stay in place. And if we see the economies, you know, have that soft landing and recover in 2025, then, of course, that's going to cause some economic growth. And remember, just think about if we have a 2% global growth, that's going to require more than 2% increase in the demand for oil. You know, oil is right now, let's say 101, 102 annual demand. You pop on 2% on that, and that tells you that unless the spend is increases in the non-OPEC world, which, you know, they are in Guyana, they are in Brazil, but America, you know, last week saw a decline of 100,000 BOEs a day from 13.3 to 13.2, simply because the industry is not getting the economics they need. And that, you know, under $70, the industry slows down because they're not making the rate of return, even on their tier one wells, and they're definitely not drilling their tier two wells. Tier one wells, they want a 1 year break even. If they're a tier two well, based on sub 70, could take a 2 years for a payout. They don't want a 2 year payout. They want everything under a 1 year payout. Because remember, the depletion in year one is 50 to 70%, and then 20, 30 after that, and then it's smaller. So if you get a well that comes on at 1,000 BOEs a day, it'll be 200 to 300 at the end of the year. Then it goes down to 150. So, of course, you got to keep on drill, baby, drill. And a lot of that is to offset declines. But you want to buy, you want to be drilling your high quality wells, but at under $70, you have lower a lower number of those. You get to 85, 90, you have a way more. You get to 95 or 100, you can drill up those tier two wells and get under a 1 year payback. So I think that the price level for energy has to go higher if you're going to incentivize the industry. Because right now the industry is focused on the pressure from shareholders who are saying, hey, we want dividend yields, we want NCIBs, we don't want you spending all your money, we want to be paid. And that pressure is on both sides of the border, and many companies talking about the pressure by institutions, especially for NCIBs, and retail investors are saying, pay me a dividend.
Okay, Joseph, I want a little bit more clarity then on what you consider some of the fundamental factors of the stocks that separate themselves from the rest of the pack. Because look, let's say the oil price stays relatively stable or even continues to appreciate. Well, then it seems like a lot of these energy stocks are fundamentally strong across the board. So what are the factors? Simplify that for me, that separate the best from the rest.
Okay, what you want to do is look at companies that have a growing production profile, significant insider ownership, and low debt. So for example, Trican has cash and no debt. Paramount Resources has investments and offsetting the debt. So you've got a kind of a no debt situation there. And anytime you can find a company with low debt and growing production and a payback, that to me is what you're looking for. I was on a call yesterday with Kuitno, and you know they're producing sub 30,000, but they have a 2026 goal of getting to 40,000 BOEs a day. Their balance sheet is in good shape, so they can continue to grow their business. And you've got a company with a market cap of $621 million, only $207 million of debt, and they did 26,292 in Q2, and that number will be 28,29,000 in Q3. And they're heading to over 30,000 on an exit level this year. And then next year, do more drilling and get to 40,000 in 2026. So you like companies like that have growth like that. You've got NuVista, you've got Birchcliff, you've got Tourmaline, you know, you've got Paramount. There's just so many names. And the question is, do you want companies that are larger cap or smaller? Smaller cap companies can grow faster. Do you want the cleanest balance sheet? Do you want extremely high or high insider ownership? We cover that in our research so that the subscribers can go and get all that information. This month, in the issue that's coming out next week, we do an insider trading report so you can see which companies that we cover have seen insider buying, and quite a few have because of the lower prices that we saw in the last week or two. There have been some that have been sellers, so that's of note, because if they're selling insiders, and if it's quite a few insiders, that's a warning signal that maybe operationally things are challenged and they want to take some money off the table. If there's a one-off, it could be they want to pay down a mortgage or whatever. But when you see multiple insider sells, That to me is something to be concerned about.
Well, Joseph, contrast for us the environment of pricing we have now, let's say in the high 60s to 70s versus if it gets up in the 80s and 90s, how that affects M&A, because there's two sides to that equation, the company selling or the company acquiring. And sometimes high prices give the juniors or the smaller companies, the mid-tiers, maybe more of an incentive to ask for too much. And maybe the companies are hesitant, but then lower prices, sometimes the larger companies can use that arbitrage they have in valuation to pick off the little guys. How do you see the M&A cycle playing out in different price scenarios?
Well, when you get companies with debt and we have one of those weaker price scenarios, companies get taken under. So we saw Pipestone being taken under by Strathcona. We saw Storm being taken out by CNQ a few years ago. We just saw a deal for Crew, which is being taken over by Tourmaline in early October, and they paid a very high price because they had 30,000 BOEs of production, but they had drilling inventory to take that to 60,000 BOEs a day. So Tourmaline was willing to pay for that. As you may know, we've been big fans of Crew for a long time, so we will be getting our shares of Tourmaline, which will be with a low cost base because we had a low cost base on Crew. So we're going to be pretty happy to own Tourmaline going forward. So that's a positive. When you get to the frothy markets, you know, like we did in 2008, or going back even to the late 70s cycle, you know, 1979, 80, 81, you'll have a lot of takeovers, but you'll have foreigners coming in because they want security supply. And, you know, if Canada's political system isn't ugly, they'll come in because they want that security supply. I'll give you, one clean example of that. You know, Mike Rose sold Berkeley to an American firm and sold Duvernay to an international firm. So you're going to find those buyers come back when they want to capture the Montney and the Duvernay for LNG on the West Coast. And they're going to want to control significant TCFs of gas, liquids rich, mostly of that, so that they can meet their growth targets for their LNG business. And I think that's going to be an attractive one thing to point out that LNG Canada, many of the members there do not have enough gas to meet their commitments. So when the first LNG shipments come, they may be forced to either contract with operators to buy gas from them, as we've seen ARC and Tourmaline do it with the U.S. side. And or we could see takeovers where there's acquisitions of companies with a significant resource potential. And we cover a lot of companies in the Montney Duvernay area because we think consolidation is going to happen. Once we start seeing more than just LNG Canada on, LNG Canada announces the second phase. We get Rockies LNG going forward. We get a number of the other projects going forward. We could have 6 to 8 BCF of new demand coming on before the end of this decade. And put that in context, we produce 16, 17 BCF that right now goes south and east. If we automatically have, 6, 7 BCF going west, we're going to have to drill out a lot of new wells, and you're not going to do it if the economics aren't attractive.
All right, Joseph, thanks for that broad update in terms of the energy space, some of the opportunities, and I think even more importantly, what companies investors should be focused on. Let's talk about your upcoming conference. As I said, October 19th, Catch the Energy Conference in Calgary. As I said, I've been a few years in a row now. I really like the opportunity to sit in longer presentations by the companies and also visit with management at their booths. You've given us the opportunity to give away 2 free tickets. So please, people, email me if you want those 2 free tickets and we will run a draw for those. But Joseph, give us a little overview, update on what to expect at this year's Catch the Energy Conference.
Well, we have a mixture of the energy industry of today, which is, the E&P companies, service companies, and then there's the energy industry of tomorrow that the TMX sponsors. So they'll have one room with critical minerals and companies in clean tech there. We right now have 41 of our spots taken. We have 4 more to fill between now and month end. And so 45 presentations going on. The conference opens up. Last year, we had the premier open it. This year, we have Brian Jean, the energy minister. Then we have these 35-minute breakout sessions, 25-minute presentations by companies, and moderated Q&A by professionals for 10 minutes. And at the end of the day, we have an LNG panel, which will have on it Chris Carlson, the CEO of Birchcliff, Charlotte Raggett, who's the president of Rockies LNG, and Brian Jean, our energy minister, will be interviewed by Jody Anhorn, who's the president of GLJ, the big engineering the reservoir engineering firm. So it's going to be a full day, food all day, and all the way from a hot breakfast when you come. We then have the big presentation in the Bella Hall, and then we go over to the other section of the building, which is where we have the conference for the rest of the day. So it's a full day, and you know, I'll be doing my presentation to help guide, you know, individuals coming who don't exactly know where they want to go. So I'll break down the sections of who's here, and then they can decide, you know, that they want large cap, small cap, dividend, whatever, energy service, and all of that will be covered so that people can make decisions on how to spend their day. I'll be at the booth too, our booth, so people want to come over and say hello and chat. Very happy to do it during those two big booth sections when we'll be spending time at our booth.
All right, Joseph. Great chatting with you on this weekend show. Again, Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report and the Ion Energy Report. Check out the links that I post within the show notes to find out more about his conference and email me directly, fleck@kereport.com, with the subject line being conference raffle tickets. I will add all those, and we will provide a raffle in the upcoming weeks to give one of you two free tickets to the conference. Everyone, thanks for tuning into this weekend show. Again, please go back through our website, podcast, and YouTube channel to listen to all of our daily editorials covering another wild week in the markets, driven a lot by that Fed rate cut. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.